Welcome to the podcast, Your Time with James Sweetman. Each week, my guests and I share stories, challenges, and vulnerabilities, all with the aim of helping us to live in a more soulful, authentic, and integrated way. So thank you for tuning in. Let's jump into this week's episode. How do you know it's time to change jobs? That's a question most of us have asked ourselves at some point. I know I have. And if you're tuning in, I suspect you might be pondering it right now. If you're familiar with my work, you know that a chunk of my one-to-one coaching falls under the umbrella heading of career fulfillment. And over the last 20 years, I've worked with hundreds of people in this area. I've accrued thousands of hours of coaching conversations with clients, whether they're in career transition, between roles, contemplating a big move, or maybe just feeling confused and seeking clarity as to the right next step. Whilst no two clients are the same, no two situations are the same, in my coaching work, certain themes have emerged. So if you're mulling over a career change, tottering on the edge of your comfort zone, with one foot ready to leap into the unknown, the other clinging to the devil you know, or if you're humming that song by The Clash, "Should I Stay or Should I Go?" Well, I'd like to think you'll get a few helpful insights from this episode. I'll take you through some push and pull factors, the motivation for changing jobs, clues to watch out for, the factors to consider, and the pitfalls to avoid. And throughout this episode, I'll pose some focused coaching questions to help you gain clarity on your current situation. But first, a little context. As I say to my coaching clients, you are the expert on being you. No one knows you like you know you. No one knows your situation better than you. So all I can do is share my experience, pose questions, and help you open the door to your own wisdom. So whatever decisions you make when it comes to your career, that you make them from a thoughtful, aligned place, where a decision or an action feels considered and proactive, not just a knee-jerk reaction. So where do we start? Well, we know that today, not everyone wants a high-powered career with a six-figure salary and all the markers of traditional career success. Great if you do, once you are conscious of your motivations, once you know your why, as Simon Sinek would say, and that your drive to fulfill your definition of career success is intrinsic. It's your personal desire, and not just what's expected of you or a reflection of old societal norms. As I've said many times and will no doubt say many more times, there is a difference between career achievement and career fulfillment. They are not mutually exclusive, but it's really only career fulfillment that I'm interested in. And if you're listening to this podcast, I suspect that that's your preference too. So the first question I'll pose to you is, what do you want out of your work at this point in your life? What do you want out of your work at this point in your life? It may not be what it once was, but it's what you want now. If I rephrase it slightly, what do you want your working life to do for you at this point in your life? If you're going to navigate change, it's useful to have a North Star to navigate by. And your considered answer to this question, what do I want out of my working life at this point in time, gives me some of the coordinates. Let's face it, what you cared about when you entered your current job or started in your career may not be what you care about now. So this is a time to reassess your priorities. How you define work and your beliefs and assumptions around work are also worth examining. For me, there are three broad ways we tend to approach our working lives. Which category would you fall into? Or maybe which categories do you straddle? Some people see work as work. It's something they endure. They'd quit if they could afford to. Maybe they enjoy the social contact, but by and large, they work to live. And nothing wrong with that. They have a job, it pays the bills, it gives them a sense of security and maybe belonging, but it's a means to an end. At worst, they tolerate it. They seek fair pay in return for fair effort that they put in. Salary here is very much compensation for having applied effort or endured a challenging work environment. In this category, you can certainly be skilled at what you do, the sort of skill that is honed over years of practice. There can, of course, be inherent satisfaction that comes from the application of that skill and the experience that you can draw upon. A second broad category of work is where you have a career or wish to shape a career. You've a higher level overview of your working life. You seek career satisfaction. You want to be seen and feel valued in your role. You want to be recognized for your unique contributions. You derive a sense of meaning from your work. You want your career to be aligned with your values, with what's important to you. You also want your career to bring out the best in you, where you can play to your strengths. Simply put, you want to enjoy your work, and the rewards are more than just a monthly payslip. I suspect many of you listening in will fall into this category. If you're contemplating changing jobs, pivoting, going more niche in your career, or thinking about starting your own business, it's often because you sense you've a lot more to give, that you're not getting the same level of satisfaction from your working life as you once did. The vast majority of one-to-one clients I see want their careers to enrich their lives, not just their pockets. The last category of work is maybe not really work at all. It's that sense of following your calling. Your working life is what you're meant to be doing. I call this a career lottery win. Some people fall into it by chance, or over time they shape it, but generally this is the output of a lot of personal development work, a healthy dose of courage, and a willingness to fully shine in the world. You've done the work to detect your purpose, for want of a better word, and you're eager to share it for the benefit of others. It may not happen overnight. It may look different than what you expect it to look. But it's that realization that by and large, you're in the right place at the right time. Whilst there is still work involved, it may not be perfect all the time. You sort of know that even if you won the actual lottery and didn't have to work to earn money, you'd still be working in this area anyway, because you love it, because it's an extension of who you are. I often work with people who might have, say, 15 or 20 years career behind them, but now they want to lean into something that is more of a calling for them. This won't be an overnight revelation. It's always been there, but having accrued a little maturity and experience, it's bubbling to the surface again. Like a seed that was planted in soil, it has lain dormant, but the conditions are now ripe for it to germinate, or at least for a little light to shine upon it. So the second question I'm offering you is, what's the idea or dream that I've had for years that I might have buried but is still alive and is perhaps now seeking my attention? So what's the dream or idea that I've had for a long time that I might have put to one side and now it's seeking my attention? The writer in me is fascinated with words, as you know, and the word career intrigues me. For the purposes of this week's podcast and for, say, posts on LinkedIn, career means working life, our occupation, something that occupies our minds and maybe our hearts. It's a series of roles that, when combined, create a career journey, perhaps up a ladder or perhaps just forward. But there's also another meaning to the word career. It's to move swiftly and in an uncontrolled way, like a car careering across the road. Sometimes here I use the analogy of tumbleweed in the desert, being blown around all over the place by external forces. If we haven't put down roots, contemplated what we want in terms of our working lives, we will feel a little all over the place, reacting to the prevailing wind, the loudest voices, whether they are noble with our best interests at heart, or whether those voices want us as a pawn in their game. Of course, everyone does their best. When I work with someone where maybe that second definition of the word career can be as applicable as the first, I share with them the analogy of hummingbirds and jackhammers. And I think you'll find this one fascinating. I first heard about hummingbirds and jackhammers when Elizabeth Gilbert, you might know her as the author of Eat, Pray, Love and many other books, when she was interviewed by Oprah back in 2016. And she says the world is divided into two types of people, hummingbirds and jackhammers. So the jackhammer is someone who is laser focused. They know what they want. They get stuck in, they hammer away, head down, getting on with it. And then there is the hummingbird, the tiny, colourful bird that floats from flower to flower, from meadow to meadow, trying a bit of this and a bit of that. Of course, neither approach to work or indeed life is right or wrong. I think it is an innate part of our human makeup. wearing my NLP hat. It's like a meta program, a natural tendency or a preference that we have. I certainly know people who are jackhammers. They are productive, they know what they want, they go after it, they can achieve great things. We can often envy these people because they can seem to be so sorted. They can also be unaware of other approaches or maybe even asleep in their lives. As our world becomes more diverse, I think a growing number of people are embracing their inner hummingbird, trying a bit of this and trying a bit of that, not willing to be categorized, no longer interested in a more traditional or linear career. Think of it like facing a big buffet on a cruise ship. The hummingbird goes with what looks appealing, tries several things, sees what they like, getting a little more of something, a little less of something else, combining flavors, creating something new. The jackhammer, on the other hand, knows what they want and sticks with it. If it nourishes them, great. They can be open to variety to enrich their experience, but this is not fundamental to them. For me, maybe that's where hummingbirds are more interesting. Or maybe it's because I've got hummingbird tendencies myself. Life is varied and life is more interesting when we stay open and curious, like the hummingbird, cross-pollinating ideas, connecting people and concepts, consuming diverse experiences and creating the new. If I keep the analogy going, if we are in a role where we feel our wings are clipped, we'll feel frustrated. A challenge many of us face is that if we have hummingbird tendencies, others can't neatly box us in. There's no one description of us, and our interests can't fit onto a business card, and a recruitment agency can't fit us into a cell on their Excel spreadsheet. If you're a hummingbird, we create nothing but stress for ourselves if we try to be a jackhammer. Our circumstances change, our interests change, we grow and evolve. For me, the combination of the two, the hummingbird and the jackhammer, work beautifully. When you discover what lights you up, get stuck in and do it to the max. So I could ask you if you're a hummingbird or a jackhammer. That would be a strange question. But assuming you have a little life experience and work experience in the bank, I'll pose a different question. What aspects of my current or previous roles do I enjoy or have I enjoyed? And what parts of my current or previous roles do I not enjoy? This is a real brainstorming question. What you're seeking to do is to identify more criteria that you want to satisfy in any future role change. Your responses to that question, which is all about contrasting experiences, gives you a lens through which to assess potential future roles. It helps you fill out or deepen your definition of career fulfillment. It will help to sharpen your focus on your North Star. We're moving now from hummingbirds to honeymoons. We've heard of the honeymoon period in relationships or maybe in the world of politics after a new government or leader is elected. But the term is equally applicable to jobs. Like some people in personal relationships, we can get itchy feet when we come to the end of the honeymoon period in our role. In the honeymoon period, things are fresh and new and exciting. We might be on the steep slope of a learning curve, but we're enjoying the challenge and getting to know the role and the people. It's said after the honeymoon phase in a personal relationship that we move into power struggle, the give and the take, testing of boundaries and tolerances, figuring out what we can change and what we have to accept. Well, it's the same with jobs. I certainly know people who, as soon as they move out of the honeymoon phase of their job, which is maybe around the 18-month mark, they begin to look elsewhere. You can see this pattern on their LinkedIn profile. Of course, we also know people whose pattern is to leave personal relationships after a similar time period, but I think that might be a topic for another podcast. Of course, there are no rights and wrongs here, but a little self-awareness is key. If moving on from a job after a year or two is your pattern, what's underpinning it? What are you seeking? What are you avoiding? If a theme emerges, such as not feeling understood or valued by colleagues, not getting my voice heard, not feeling respected, it's worthwhile examining how you are engaging with colleagues and what your expectations are. As I said to one client not too long ago, the one thing all your past jobs have in common is you. Sometimes we have to look in the mirror. Life is always trying to teach us something, and are we listening? So another question to ponder is, what are my expectations when it comes to work? And are they realistic or achievable? Or a variation is, well, where have I been getting in my own way? That's actually a few different questions. Having worked across many industries and a range of companies over the last 20 years, I can say that there are no utopias out there. No organization is perfect. The grass isn't always greener. As the management consultant Charles Handy famously said, organizations are nothing but the people in them. And because as people we are perfectly imperfect, the same holds true for companies. For me, there are several tensions that we always have to manage or try to balance at work. And if I feel imbalanced in these areas, I won't feel contented. And if I'm not happy, I'll be looking for ways to rebalance. And that always includes weighing up my options and maybe looking elsewhere. Of course, the most obvious tension these days is work-life balance. Does my working environment give me a fighting chance at forging a work-life balance that feels equitable to me? This presupposes that you have considered what you are seeking when it comes to work-life balance. Remember, balance is never static. It's always about little adjustments as we go. Today, for many roles, our expectation is the ability to work at least partially from home within a hybrid working model. As I say, some people work to live, others live to work, but no one works to commute. Another tension that we have to manage is what I call the real work versus phantom work. This might be a new phrase for you. Phantom work is the politics, the gossip, the drama in an organization. Some will always be present. It's part of the course when a group of people gather together for whatever reason. But if it's excessive, it's stressful and draining. A variation of this is the tension between the time you invest in servicing your customer or client and the time you have to invest in managing your manager. Remember the old adage, people join companies, but they leave managers. Another factor or tension that we're always grappling with at work is change. I know some people who crave change in their working environments because they feel their organization is stale, not moving with the times, run by managers with outdated management styles. Equally, I know others who struggle because of never-ending change, and they seek some stable ground to catch their breath. We respond to change in our own unique ways. We all have different levels of tolerance when it comes to change, especially when that change is driven by circumstances outside of our control. Changes in company structure, reporting hierarchies, the personalities of managers and colleagues can also prompt the urge for us to make our own changes. I've certainly worked with clients where they've spoken about how the culture in their company has changed, culture being the unwritten rules as to how things are done. They say things such as their company is no longer the company they joined, that there's now a cultural mismatch, that the attitude and behaviours they value are not what the organisation values, irrespective of what's written on those glossy mission or value statements. Whilst we know nothing can stay the same, sometimes we have to ask ourselves, is this the sort of company I want to work in? Or if my current job in this company was advertised today, would I apply for it? If we've been through a lot of change at work, change that we had to respond to, that is, that we didn't initiate it ourselves, it's natural to feel stressed because we've been in reactive mode. When everything is up in the air, when no new norms have been established, we will often seek to balance out this feeling of reactivity by being proactive and taking back control. And this involves taking greater ownership of our careers. I know many clients over the years who've gone through this, and I have too. If I go back maybe 20 years ago to when I left the corporate world, one of the driving factors was that the company I worked with had gone through a prolonged period of change. There was new management, there was new IT systems, and then there was a merger with another company. I wanted to take my autonomy back. I wanted to feel like the captain of my own ship again. And this is a common occurrence. It's why statistics always show that a percentage of staff will leave organizations after a period of substantial change. Sometimes, too, we can realize that the job we're in has changed. You know, what we're doing now is radically different to what we once did. I remember working with a client a few years ago who worked in L&D, learning and development, and loved delivering internal training courses within her organization. Over time, she ended up coordinating other trainers and planning courses. It took her away from the core work of training that she so enjoyed. While she was promoted into this supervisory role, it wasn't a role that she really liked. You know, it's like the inverted version of the Peter principle, you know, the Peter principle of being promoted to the point of incompetence. Well, maybe there should be another principle that illustrates being promoted to a point where you no longer enjoy the work. Another tension that we're always balancing at work is between what I label the churn and the creative. You could use other terms here, such as certainty and variety, or maybe even safety and stretch. Churn is the term I use for the work that pays the bills. It's what we refer to when we maybe shrug our shoulders and say, same stuff, different day, or words to that effect. This work is familiar and routine, and we might joke that we could do it with our eyes shut. It might have excited us once, but maybe the novelty has gone out of it. However, it's probably also work that enabled us to develop skill or skills in this area. Odds are that you're good at it, experienced and knowledgeable. All roles will have an element of churn. We might also refer to it as the certain predictable aspects of our roles. We want certain aspects of our roles to be known and certain because that's where we feel most comfortable. It's where we can be unconsciously competent. It's where we feel confident. This element of predictability helps us feel in control and more secure. However, too much certainty and predictability means that we can get very comfortable in our comfort zones to the point of being stuck in a rut, and the end result is boredom. Whilst I found interesting with myself over the last few years is that many aspects of my own work became a little bit predictable. The result was that I was getting bored. I think it was on Martha Beck's podcast where she said that if you've been doing the same job for 20 years, and I'm 20 years doing what I'm doing in January, odds are that you've mastered it. I found this an interesting concept when combined with maybe Malcolm Gladwell's thinking around his famous 10,000 hours. I think it was in his book Tipping Point where he said that you need to apply 10,000 hours of effort to get world class in your field. Now, if it takes 10 years to get world class, I wonder when does boredom kick in? It can be the case that in your current role, you've achieved what you've set out to achieve, and you're now eager for a new challenge. I can certainly relate to that, and it was one of the reasons why I went back to college last year. You know, it wasn't necessarily to change job, but it was something new, something that got me outside of my comfort zone, something that allowed me to expand my own vision for myself. So another question is a blunt one, but it's a powerful one. Have I quite simply outgrown my current role? So what's the counterbalance to this churn and certainty? Well, for me, it's creative work. This is what excites us. It's at the cutting edge of our development and expertise. It challenges us. It pushes our boundaries and requires us to step beyond our comfort zone into new territory as we reach towards our potential. It will always involve taking a risk and managing uncertainty. It's work that's rich with variety. It doesn't have to be revolutionary. It might be instigating a new initiative or trying a fresh approach to an old challenge or process. In my business, it could be something as simple as updating some slides I use in presentations or giving my website a much needed facelift. For others, it could be breathing some life into a new idea or devoting a percentage of your working week to working on and not just working in your business. When I work with people in the area of career change or career fulfillment, one of the things we explore is their willingness or their ability to find what I call wiggle room, ways to refresh their current role. And this always means bringing a renewed sense of creativity into it. This may or may not be possible, but it's always worth considering. Of course, some people love the predictable and the routine. They are quite happy to perform the same tasks day in and day out. But I suspect most of us would want an element of variety in our work because that keeps things interesting. Of course, too much variety and uncertainty, and we're into chaos. And no one likes a chaotic working environment. So all roles have a balance between certainty and variety. And we have different tolerances for it too. As I sometimes say, we're all accountants when it comes to our careers. We assess the gains and the losses. If we've itchy feet, it's often a combination of both push and pull factors. I've shared some already, but here are a few more. Most of us want to feel that we're growing and developing in our jobs, or at least have the opportunity to grow and develop. This mirrors life in general, where as humans, we're either growing or dying. A factor that can certainly push us out of an organisation is if we don't feel we have the opportunity to grow or progress. This is heightened when we know that we're capable of adding more value or contributing more, or when we simply know that our potential far exceeds what we're currently doing or are likely to be doing if we stay. Unfortunately, another common factor that can push good people out the door is not feeling valued or appreciated, that our opinion doesn't matter, that we're taken for granted, or worse, demeaned or bullied. We know that if we find ourselves in a toxic work environment, that all aspects of our health will suffer. If we look at the factors that will pull us out of a role or a company, well, the most magnetic pull factor of all when it comes to changing jobs is what I mentioned earlier, a calling, or even more evocatively, a soul calling. Deep down, you know what you're meant to be doing, turning your passion into your profession, following your heart's desire. That's not always feasible in the short term, but if we keep putting off even investigating options, we will pay a high price. We suffer a sense of betrayal that we've left ourselves down. Because this is one of the most difficult feelings to swallow, we will project it onto others. From my experience, when we feel betrayed by colleagues or managers who don't value us, who overlook us or take us for granted, it's often just a mirror reflection of how we have betrayed ourselves by staying too long in a job that crushes our soul just a little more every day. As I always say, in every moment we do our best. We make the best decisions we can. We do what we do to feel as good as we can. We know too, though, that we do have a tendency to put acceptance by others ahead of our own potential happiness. We will also put feeling important or special ahead of our own happiness. Now, that itself might be a topic for another podcast. As I move towards the end of this week's episode, let me speak a little bit about clarity. When I ask a new coaching client what they would like to achieve by the end of a coaching session or two, the majority will say that they are seeking clarity. Clarity as to the next step in their careers. However, when we think we are seeking clarity, most of the time we're actually seeking certainty. We want to know for sure that instigating change will make us happier. We want to be certain that we're doing the right thing. But life doesn't deal in certainties. Life deals in possibilities. When we look through binoculars, we have to adjust the lens to see a distant landscape or to bring a faraway object into focus. We may have to polish the lens to enhance our vision. The same is true when we ponder what's ahead for us. Clarity is the quality of our seeing. It's how we view where we currently are. It's the process of turning our gaze in the general direction of where we wish to go, steered not solely by logic, but also by our emotions, what excites us, what lights us up. We can't rely on clarity striking in a eureka moment, but there are reliable ways to adjust our lens. Life may not give us certainty, but it does give us contrast, that sifting and sorting of our wants, tastes, preferences and experiences. The gap between where you are now and where you wish to be starts as a visualization gap. With curiosity, we can expand our vision by contemplating the big question, what's possible for me? And that's the final question I'll leave you with this week. What's possible for me in the months and years ahead? Before I share a final analogy, and there's been quite a few today, the hummingbirds and the jackhammers, honeymoons, tumbleweed in the desert, sailing the ocean of change towards your North Star, I think I'm getting poetic again. Let me repeat those reflection questions that I've scattered across this episode. The first one was, what do I want out of my work at this point in my life? Because it may not be what it once was, time for a little reassessment. Then there was, what's the idea or dream that I've had for years that I might have buried, but it's still alive and perhaps now seeking my attention? The question that helps with clarity is actually one that assists us in contrasting experiences. And that one was, what aspects of my current or previous roles have I enjoyed? Or what part of my current or previous jobs do I not enjoy? Another question, or a little suite of questions to ponder is, well, what's my expectations when it comes to work? Are they realistic or achievable? Or the variation on that one was, well, am I actually getting in my own way? And then there were those two shorter but powerful questions. Have I quite simply outgrown my current job? And lastly, what's possible for me in the months and years ahead? Remembering that life doesn't deal in certainties, only possibilities. So to close, I often equate changing jobs with moving house. When you originally moved into where you are living, you had certain requirements. As time passes, your priorities may have changed or you may have simply outgrown them. Do you stay put? Do you renovate? Do you move? Think of your job in the same way. Have your priorities and needs changed? Can you tweak or renovate your job to make it more habitable, more tolerable? Can I remind myself of what I like about my current job? Or deep down, do I know it's time to move on? Ultimately, only you will know the answer. But I hope some of the areas I've explored this week has deepened your understanding of your current situation. And maybe you have a better handle on the push and pull factors at play. So thank you for tuning in, and until next week. Thank you for listening this week. If you enjoyed this episode and have a moment, please rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. And maybe you'd like to share it with a friend too. For more information about me, James Sweetman, my coaching services, workshops, books, and for more podcast episodes, be sure to visit jamessweetman.com.